I'm Carmi Levy. This is number 0334, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0334. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Anthony Del Call, one of the minds behind the successful comic book Shakespeare Kills, has now turned his sights to a comic version of the popular game Assassin's Creed.
It's one of the coolest video games out there. And it's funny because when we were first approached by Titan Comics, our publisher, they had initially said, well, we can't tell you what it is yet until you sign in a non-disclosure agreement. And as I was signing it, I actually had my fingers crossed. I'm like, please let it be Assassin's Creed. Please let it be Assassin's Creed. And lo and behold, that's what it was. I mean, and it's really exciting to be able to do the comic book version of it and kind of start our, you know, create new characters and new worlds within the franchise.
Pete Trabuco, author of America's Top Roller Coasters and Amusement Parks, is back with his list of the top parks for 2016.
That's a list of the top 30 of the actual top 40 that I put in my new book, which is coming out in June of 2016, which is going to be in 6 months. My favorite roller coasters and thrill rides and amusement parks. What I did basically was take not just the best rides and attractions, but also the shows, how family oriented are they, what's it like to be there, the culture and so on down the line. Location, you know, is it a destination park? Also, how many people go to that park? You know, what's the attendance like?
Stuart Nullman has another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and Book Banter joins Will Ferguson for an eye-opening look at Rwanda today with Road Trip Rwanda. We'll be hitting the road very soon on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0334, was technology analyst and journalist Carmi Levy, Canada's go-to tech guru, a geek who tracks the telecommunications, web services, and social media markets, and frequently speaks to people like Business News Network, the Canadian Press, and others, too many to mention here. And he makes sense of the industry's latest news and trends. You can also check out his blog. He does some great pictures, by the way. He's also a very good photographer. Check out his blog at writteninc.com. That's writteninc, I-N-C. Take a look at that blog. And again, thank you very much, Carmi, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. A program that's also heard, by the way, on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A man was arrested in Orlando after he and his wife held luggage hostage and assaulted police and hotel staff during a trip to Disney World. Now, the altercation began after a luggage mix-up at Disney's Animal Kingdom Villas, which accidentally sent 14 pieces of luggage to the room of 49-year-old Setia Kurniawan and his 44-year-old wife, Vani Gustamago, who were vacationing with their children. When hotel staff attempted to retrieve the luggage, the Australian couple refused to open the door for hours, demanding compensation for a broken Hello Kitty toothbrush. Let me repeat that. Demanding compensation for a Hello Kitty toothbrush. Now, the manager then called police and describing the couple as aggressive and confrontational in a police report. When police arrived, Gustamago abruptly opened the door and began yelling and sticking her finger in an officer's face. The officer then batted her finger away, causing her husband to lunge forward in her defense. The report states that as the officer restrained the husband, Gustamago dragged the hotel manager into the room by her jacket and hit an officer in the ear. Police were able to detain the couple after the altercation, arresting the husband on charges of battery, grand theft, and resisting arrest. He was later released on bail, while his wife was released to tend to the couple's children. You know, I'll say it again, this was over a Hello Kitty toothbrush. I'm beginning to wonder if perhaps it's not just Floridians who act weird in the Sunshine State, but also anybody who visits it. And by the way, isn't Disney World supposed to be the friendliest place on Earth? Yeah. Russian artist Pyotr Pavlensky, who is 31 years old, has devoted his career to getting on government's nerves and succeeded once again in November. First, a little background. Listeners to the Stuff File program may remember when we reported back in 2013 that at the time he nailed his scrotum, ouch, to the floor in Moscow's Red Square to protest police oppression. Yeah, that made me squirm too. Anyway, in his latest event, he set fire to the front door of the headquarters of Russia's security service, the FSB, which was formerly the KGB, and has been detained. And through his cell, he demanded his charge of vandalism be changed to terrorism. Now, a member of the Russian band Pussy Riot called the door fire the most important work of contemporary art in recent years. Well, you know, different strokes for different folks, I guess. Pavlensky once sewed his lips together protesting the arrest of Pussy Riot. You know, sewing his lips shut and nailing his scrotum to the floor, do you get the feeling that he might enjoy the pain more than the causes he's allegedly fighting for? Yeah. Moving right along, it seemed like a good idea at the time. A mailman in Wisconsin was arrested after he played what was probably a good intention, but ultimately ill-conceived prank on a female acquaintance. 52-year-old letter carrier David A. Goodman had a friendly relationship with 21-year-old Tiffany Washington, who works at a law firm on Goodman's route. When Goodman noticed that young Tiffany was stressed out one day, he wanted to make her laugh. So, casting professionalism and any common sense he might have had aside, Goodman decided to deliver her the mail naked. Now, Goodman told the police that after the delivery of a batch of mail to the law firm, he saw that she was stressed out. He said that he told the woman that he would return to deliver a second batch of mail in the nude to cheer her up. "Oh, come on. You do not have the balls to do that," she said. She was wrong. Unfortunately for Goodman, Ms. Washington did not find it funny. He tried to apologize, but it was too late. She called the police. Goodman was cited for lewd and lascivious behavior. The United States Postal Service released a statement saying that Goodman has been suspended from delivering mail. Elvis said it best. Return to sender. Address unknown. Meanwhile, 81-year-old John Knutson of Ormond Beach, Florida, told police that he got into an argument with his 44-year-old son, also named John Knutson, after he told his son to get a job. Again, I said he's 44. The younger Knutson apparently didn't like that advice. The father said that his son tried to electrocute him by putting two wires on his chest. The other end was apparently plugged into the wall. The older man said he blacked out, but was later able to sneak out of the house to call for help. The younger John Knutson was arrested on charges of attempted first-degree murder and aggravated assault on an elderly disabled person. The younger man's motive, police say, he discovered that he was the sole beneficiary of his father's will. Well, not anymore. This brings new meaning, by the way, to shocking family values, doesn't it? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, here's a story that includes two of our favorite locations, Florida and a Walmart store. Sheriff's deputies responded to a call from a Walmart in St. Augustine, Florida, reporting a shoplifter who had allegedly stolen $1,700 worth of merchandise. After arriving, four deputies escorted the suspect to his car, where they spotted a white bucket in the back. Suspecting there might be more stolen merchandise, the deputies opened the bucket and were struck with the fumes from what police called a one-pot meth lab. The area around the store was shut down while hazmat crews cleared the area. The officers were taken to the hospital as a precaution, and the stolen merchandise was required to be decontaminated before it could be returned to the store. And by the way, even though it was decontaminated, would you want to buy that stuff? No. The car, which deputies say was borrowed, had to be decontaminated as well before it was returned to its rightful owner. Gee, I feel for the owner of that car. You know, most people, when they lend their car, get upset when you move the seat and change the radio station. Having your vehicle turned into a meth lab on wheels is a whole new set of angst. Wow. Anyway, let's get to our first guest on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? It's been a couple of years since we talked to Anthony Del Call on the program. He's one of the creators, along with Connor McCreary, of Kill Shakespeare, which was initially a 12-part comic book series featuring Shakespeare's most famous heroes. Well, they have a new series out called Assassin's Creed, which dives into the Salem witch trials of 1692. So Anthony is back on the show via Skype from Toronto to talk about it. Hi, Anthony.
Hello, Peter. I'm happy to be back on the program.
Happy to have you back on the program. Now, you've been very busy. I mentioned Kill Shakespeare. I've now mentioned Assassin's Creed. And I believe the last time we were talking to you, which was back in June of 2014, you guys had started a stage play, a radio play. So you're branching out.
Oh yeah, I mean, for Kill Shakespeare, yeah, definitely. We're trying to turn it into what the people in the industry, quote unquote, like to call transmedia. We launched it originally as the comic book series. We have a stage production that's played in 24 cities worldwide now, and I think there's about 3 or 4 productions slated for this year here in North America. We have a board game that IDW Games released in late 2014. Right now we're currently working on 2 adaptations. One, I can't really talk about, they haven't made any announcements on that yet. The second is we are developing Kill Shakespeare for television with Universal Cable Productions. So that is probably the most exciting venture out of them all at the moment.
Wow. So let's talk a little bit about Assassin's Creed.
Yes, Assassin's Creed. I mean, as you or your listeners may or may not know, Assassin's Creed is a very, very successful video game franchise. I think they put out almost a dozen versions of it, whether it's console or PC or little add-ons. But it's an amazing world in which the main character or main characters of these stories are able to delve back into key historical periods in time, whether it's the French Revolution, the American Revolution, Renaissance Italy and Florence. It's a great thing. So it's one of the coolest video games out there. And it's funny because when we were first approached by Titan Comics, our publisher, they had initially said, well, we can't tell you what it is yet until you sign in a non-disclosure agreement. And as I was signing it, I actually had my fingers crossed. I'm like, please let it be Assassin's Creed. Please let it be Assassin's Creed. And lo and behold, that's what it was. It's really exciting to be able to do the comic book version of it and kind of start our, create new characters and new worlds within the franchise.
So how different is that from your perspective? You've worked with the stuff that, Bill Shakespeare wrote, and now you're doing something a little more modern and within the rights of somebody else. What's it like? Because I would assume when you were doing Kill Shakespeare that you were on your own. You can go anywhere you wanted, right? Are you more confined in this situation as to what you can and cannot do with Assassin's Creed?
Yes and no. I mean, in the terms of Shakespeare, I mean, he's been dead for almost 400 years. Actually, 2016 is the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's death. He died on April 23rd, 1616, on his birthday. How poetical. Since there are no heirs to the estate and he's been around, everything's in public domain. So at no point did we actually have to go to anyone for permission or have anyone vet our scripts or anything like that. However, having said that, I mean, you have millions of Shakespeare fans around the world, so you don't really want to piss them off. So you want to make sure that you create something that they're going to enjoy. Now, on Assassin's Creed, yes, we do have masters that we do have to report to. We have not only Titan Comics, but also Ubisoft. But both of those organizations and the people that we work with have been amazing. They've been very hands-off. They just want to create the best product possible. And in fact, I actually enjoy working with the amount of restrictions that we have here because I feel like I can be more creative that way, where it's like, okay, you can only paint within these lines here, okay, but I still get to decide on what colors to paint and what kind of designs to do within the lines. It's creativity through minimalization, I guess.
Now, with you and Connor doing, again, Kill Shakespeare and then all the things that have come out of that, do you guys worry about spreading yourself too thin?
My wife definitely does. Yeah, I mean, it is a concern because not only, in addition to doing Assassin's Creed and then developing Kill Shakespeare for TV and doing some other adaptations, I mean, we have other things coming up. I have an Audible drama that I'm working on, an audio drama, and there's some other television projects. So there is a lot. What I've just really learned to do is just you have to become as efficient as possible. And I mean, a few years ago when it was just Kill Shakespeare, you can take your time writing. But I mean, I found that I've become a lot, not only a better writer, but also a very faster writer in the last year or two now that we're juggling a number of projects.
Did you ever anticipate at any time when you first started Kill Shakespeare that it would lead down to these various roads that you are now on?
There was a part of me that wished or hoped, but, being the realist that I am, I didn't count the chickens before they hatched, and I still don't feel as though they completely hatched. I mean, yes, we have Assassin's Creed and the three issues that are out, and issue four comes out next week. They are quite successful in Kill Shakespeare. We've been able to spawn a number of variations of it, but I still don't feel like a complete success story on that front. But no, I'm happy. And, a lot of things that were only dreams have definitely come true.
So, again, with Assassin's Creed, how can people get their hands on it?
Assassin's Creed, the comic series, each individual one, in each individual issue are available at any comic book shop. You can go to comicbookshoplocator.com, I believe. So in any city, you can also order them on Amazon or from your local comic book shop. The first volume, I don't have the exact release date, but that'll come out in spring, and that'll collect the entire Salem Witch Trials story. And then we're in the process of writing the second arc, which will take place. Oh, I don't think I'm allowed to announce that yet. So.
Oh, okay.
You almost had a scoop there. You almost stole it from me.
Okay. We won't give away any secrets or spoilers. Again, it's amazing what you guys have accomplished, and it keeps you really, really busy, as you say. Besides your wife being concerned about being spread too thin, do you get to enjoy some time off?
That's one of the things that my wife, Lisa here, has really been able to help out with. Until I met her, I was never really the sort of person that could take vacation at all. But having met her, we're able to take some time off, and I'm able to fully relax and, I guess you could say, unplug or get off the grid from all the stories and everything. And it's quite good because it allows me to recharge my battery. So when I do get back, when I do boot the laptop up again, it does help me kind of I feel more inspired that way.
Yeah, and of course we should mention we're talking about Assassin's Creed, but Kill Shakespeare is still chugging along as well, correct?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We have a couple, like I said, we've got a couple big things. I mean, Universal Cable Productions have been a great studio partner, and we've teamed up with a great supervising writer to develop it with at the moment. Unfortunately, I don't have anything to announce, but there will be some big things happening soon. We have another adaptation, and then also we're looking at, people have been asking, begging, pleading for us to continue the comic series. And unfortunately, with everything else, that's sort of been on the back burner, but we will be pulling it out of the drawer again this year and telling more stories in that format.
Well, you've got a great little empire going on there. I'm just waiting to see when you have the Kill Shakespeare theme park. That's the next thing.
I have always joked that I will be the happiest, not when we have a television series, but when we have action figures. Because to me, that would be the coolest thing ever. I mean, I know as a teenager, I'm sure I would have loved an Othello or a Juliet action figure. If we can pull that off in the next couple of years, then I'll be tickled pink, as they say.
Excellent. Well, Anthony, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. Again, I know how busy you are, so I really appreciate it. And continued success with all you do.
Thank you, and continued success with you and your program. I mean, I think this is the third time I've been on, or fourth time, I'm not sure, but every time it's quite pleasurable to be able to sit down and chat with you like that.
I think it's the fourth time you've been on. Again, thank you very much for being on the program.
Whoa, am I becoming like the Tom Hanks or Alec Baldwin of the show?
Absolutely, and you don't want to be the Matt Damon of the show.
That's a very good point.
Who never gets on. Thanks, Anthony, for being on the show.
Thanks a lot, Peter.
Anthony Del Call, one of the creators of the Assassin's Creed comic book. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0334, and you'll find links to Anthony's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about the top amusement parks for 2016. Plus, Stuart Nullman was along with another edition of Book Banter. And, of course, there is an idiot of the day. But right here, right now, we have more Stuff File news on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, Frank E. Blake Jr. got a visit from his wife in the Henrico County, Virginia jail. His other wife also visited at the same time, which led police to investigate Blake's situation. They discovered Blake was still married to his second wife when he married his third. They also found that Blake was married, or rather had married his second wife, on the day he received notification that his first wife had filed for divorce, even though they were still legally married at the time. Now, Blake pleaded no contest to bigamy and was sentenced to 5 years in jail, with 3.5 of those years suspended. I want to apologize to y'all in the courtroom, he said before his sentencing. I didn't know I was breaking the law at all. You can put me on a lie detector. Yeah. May I suggest an idiot detector as well? Also, since he seems to have a plethora of wives and they now all know his situation, perhaps he might feel safer in jail. Police in Germany say a man has died after he and two others blew up a condom machine and he was hit in the head by a flying piece of metal. Officers were alerted to the explosion in a town near the Dutch border and found cash and condom packages lying on the ground, apparently untouched. A local hospital informed police that a 29-year-old man had died after being brought in by two other men. They initially said he had fallen downstairs, but police said one of them later admitted the victim's injuries were related to the explosion. They say the three men apparently got into a car after triggering the explosion, but the 29-year-old didn't close his door and was hit by debris when the machine exploded. That's the latest case of birth control, by the way, I've ever heard of. Yeah. And 59-year-old Peter Robbins, the original voice of Charlie Brown in the Peanuts TV specials, starting back in 1965 with A Charlie Brown Christmas, is in trouble with the law again. In 2013, he was sentenced to probation in a stalking and threatening case. Robbins pleaded guilty to violating his parole after sending threats to the manager of the mobile home park where he lived and offered in writing to pay to kill the sheriff of San Diego County, California, where he lived. He also cut off his GPS monitoring device and was captured at the Mexican border crossing as he returned to the United States. Robbins, who claimed he is mentally ill, was declared mentally competent after a psychiatric exam. He was sentenced to 4 years and 8 months in prison. But all he heard the judge say was, wah, 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 wah. No, seriously. I mean, wouldn't you think, seriously now, wouldn't you think that he would not have psychological issues, what with all the therapy sessions he's had with Lucy over the years? Okay, we have a couple of stories for you right now that could definitely come under the headline of Sweet Ironies. Number one, as deputy leader of Scotland's South Lanarkshire County, Jackie Burns was instrumental in the budgetary closing of all 24 public toilets in the area. In November, Burns was fined the equivalent of about $60 after he, out on the town, could not hold it any longer and urinated in the street. Actually, that story better describes karma, not irony. And story number two, 29-year-old Hector Segura, in town for a Washington, D.C. conference on drug policy reform, with most attendees certain that the war on drugs has failed, was found by police naked in a flower bed in a neighborhood near his hotel in Arlington, Virginia, with, according to police, bath salts being the culprit. It required 2 taser shots to subdue him as he pounded on a squad car. This is your brain. This is your naked-ass brain on drugs. Any questions? And still with drugs, here's an interesting case. Brandon Terry and Ms. Casey Fowler were detained after calling 911 5 times to report possums jumping out of their refrigerator and microwave, worms from their floor, and midgets in camouflage. They denied any drug use, but police say it is likely bath salts. By the way, midgets in camouflage sounds like the great name for a Busby Berkeley musical. Couldn't you just picture the overhead kaleidoscope dance number? Midgets in camouflage. Yes. Moving right along, Officer Brady Pratt wanted to practice his quick draw, so he did, in an office at Des Moines, Iowa International Airport. He also may need to practice not firing his gun while drawing it. The bullet hit the ceiling, went through the wall, and ended up in a hall ceiling. No one was hurt. Discipline is always a possibility in cases of officer negligence, said a police spokesman. There will be a very thorough review. Really? Really? Just what needs to be thoroughly reviewed here? While practicing his quick draw, he unexpectedly fired his gun. I think what might be necessary in this situation is a quick review and another unexpected firing. Yeah. Anyway, we have time for one more story before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And let's talk about another questionable cop, shall we? A few months after 41-year-old Police Corporal Chad Thomas was promoted to chief of the Mahoning Township, Pennsylvania Police Department, other officers say they saw Thomas's eyes flutter and he was unresponsive, reports say. One officer reported that he thought Thomas suffered a seizure, but when Thomas came out of it, he allegedly admitted that he had been huffing from a can of dust-off spray to relieve stress. He was on duty. The state's attorney general charged Thomas with smelling or inhaling a toxic releasing substance and possession of a solvent for release of toxic vapors or fumes. He was suspended without pay. I'm not proud of this, Thomas later said. I'm sorry for the decision that I made that put me in this situation. I'm very sorry if it caused anyone to lose faith in me, and I will work extremely hard to earn trust back from everybody. Yes, work, he said. After Thomas waived his right to a preliminary hearing on the criminal charges, he was allowed to return to lead the police department. The question is, where is he leading them? Wow. Anybody who's arrested now in the future will be stating, wait a minute, I got picked up, meanwhile the police chief is huffing? Yikes. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Pete Tribuco is a travel expert and also a bit of a thrill seeker. He is the author of America's Top Roller Coasters and Amusement Parks. We talked to him about roller coasters and water parks in the past, but with a new year upon us, he's back with his list of the top amusement parks for 2016. Hi, Peter.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Fine. Thanks for being on the program with us once again.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me on. I do appreciate it.
Now, I've got your list, which is about 30, it's exactly 30 parks that you list as the top amusement parks for 2016, and you are the expert. So first of all, I want to ask, what is it that makes an amusement park top of the list, one of the top 30?
Well, that's a list of the top 30 of the actual top 40 that I put in my new book, which is coming out in June of 2016, which is going to be in 6 months, my favorite roller coasters and thrill rides and amusement parks. But I couldn't fit all 40, so 30 were on the list. And what I did basically was take not just the best rides and attractions, but also the shows. How family oriented are they? What's it like to be there? The culture and so on down the line. Location. Is it a destination park? Also, how many people go to that park? What's the attendance like? So that, a lot went into the list of the top 30, or in this case, it's actually a top 40 list, two of which were made from Canada, of course, La Ronde, as well as Canada's Wonderland made that list as well.
Well, they say that absence makes the heart grow fonder, and I bring that term up because looking at the list of the top 30 that you have, a lot of them are in the East, and I'm just wondering, is part of the lure, first of all, a good amusement park, but also something that is not necessarily accessible 12 months of the year?
Well, that's it. That's part of it as well, but I think it ended up being at the East because you'll find a lot of the Six Flags or Cedar Fair operations, as well as Disney, Universal Studios, and again, that's a lot in Florida, are going to be the major companies that invest a lot of money into their investments, SeaWorld, Busch Gardens, and so on down the line. You do have a bunch also down in California. I mean, there are hubs of where these amusement parks really lie. Florida is one place, Texas another place, California, and the Northeast, pretty much the New York, Connecticut, Pennsylvania area, it seems to be where a lot of the parks end up. There are much smaller parks in the Midwest, although, of course, one of the biggest ones is Cedar Point in Sandusky, Ohio. But you'll find that in the middle of the country, there really aren't as many amusement parks, and the ones that are there are very small and far between.
Well, it's interesting you bring up Cedar Point in Sandusky, Ohio, because I was just going to ask about that one. You have it as number one at the top of your list. So what makes Cedar Point so special?
Well, remember, I'm a thrill ride enthusiast, and I'm looking for rides that basically are going to challenge me, scare me, and also thrill me all at the same time. And when you come to roller coasters, and you can ask 10 roller coaster enthusiasts or thrill ride people or amusement park specialists, and they'll always put Cedar Point either number one or number two, depending on where they live, as being the top, because it does offer 17, 18 different roller coasters, all different types. Out of my top, 40 steel coasters, you're going to find three or four on the list, as well as two or three wood coasters on the list. They really specialize in actually getting the biggest rides, the biggest thrills, the biggest attractions. Now, if it had been just for theming, obviously Disney World, followed by Disneyland, and Universal Studios would be on that list. As number one, but overall, I am a roller coaster enthusiast. And when you look at the at what they have to offer, Cedar Point is still number one in my book and in many people's books at this time.
Very quickly, I'll just mention the top 10 since you were mentioning several of them for our listeners. There was Cedar Point in Sandusky, Ohio. Number two is Walt Disney World. Number three, Six Flags Magic Mountain in Valencia, California. Number four, Universal Studios Island of Adventure in Orlando. Disney World California Adventure is number five. Six Flags Great Adventure in Jackson, New Jersey, number six. Busch Gardens Africa in Tampa, Florida, number seven. Hershey Park in Hershey, Pennsylvania, number eight. Number nine is Six Flags Over Texas in Arlington, Texas. And number 10 is Kennywood Park in West Mifflin, Pennsylvania. Now, you mentioned just a few moments ago, you mentioned wooden roller coasters and you mentioned steel roller coasters. And I just want to get your personal idea or thoughts on a preference between the two.
Well, they're actually totally different. As you know, a steel coaster, you can do a lot more. You can actually bend the steel. And, of course, up until very, very recently, you really wasn't very safe for or very economical to have a wood coaster do a loop-de-loop or a barrel roll or do anything or speed-wise that a steel coaster could do, because obviously it's a lot faster. And you can thank Walt Disney for that in 1959 when he created the Matterhorn over at Disneyland. But, you know, people love the old rickety sounds of a wood roller coaster, you know, basically with the clickety-clack sounds of the track and everything, and even the swaying of the structure, which is done purposely, so it looks like it's falling apart. These things are very important. I personally like speed and height, so I'm going to be going with steel coasters all the time. And, of course, you can do a lot more different things. You can do a lot of elements. Pretty much that mimic what you do in an airplane. And being a pilot, a former pilot that I am, it's a good rush and one that I really like.
As I mentioned, a lot of these parks seem to be in the east. You already answered the question as to why that is and the popularity of them. What about people who go further afield? I mean, I know we're talking about the top 40, the top 30 on the list. They're all basically in North America. Has the rest of the world caught up to what's happening with roller coasters and theme parks, or are they still lagging far behind?
No, absolutely. They are definitely caught up. My book is mostly on North America, but you will find a lot of amusement parks that are amazing over in Europe as well. And, of course, you know, China's even got amusement parks and roller coasters these days. It's Japan, of course. Mostly all of Europe is doing it. And the thing to know about this is that the manufacturers, you know, when they have their salesmen go out, they sell these rides everywhere. Obviously, not just North America, all over the world. And they'll customize it for a location, for a footprint, and so on down the line. So a ride you might find, let's say, at Cedar Point, you'll find a similar one, let's say, at Drayton Towers or Drayton Manor in England, as well as maybe, you know, I think it's called Mitsubishi Spa Land in Japan. So you'll find the same rides, the same attractions, you know, the same manufacturers there. United States has more than anyone else because it's a really, really multi-billion dollar business here. But you'll find these rides everywhere, and, you know, each one has its own culture, its own diversity, its own fun, you know, I mean. A good example of that is when I went to La Ronde over in Montreal. Not many people spoke English, but, you know, laughter is universal, and having fun is universal. And before the day was through, I had 30 friends I couldn't talk to, but had a great time riding with them. So it's all about the rides. It's all about the manufacturers, and it transcends lines of countries and cultures.
When you talk about the lifespan of a roller coaster, and I'm now talking purely from an interest point of view, is there a shorter attention span these days? And by that I mean a new roller coaster comes out someplace in the world and people want to flock to it, people want to go to it, people want to try it and get that thrill. But after they've done it a dozen times or 100 times, does the excitement of that wear off and they're looking for another kick, another new roller coaster?
Well, it's funny you should mention that. I have a ride called Thrill Ride Maniac. It's a reality show called Thrill Ride Maniac, which we're pushing through to the networks right now. And it's about all walks of life, not just roller coasters, but jumping out of airplanes, you know, riding Formula One cars and doing crazy stuff that you normally wouldn't do, you know, being an astronaut for a day and zero Gs in the vomit comet and stuff like that. To answer your question, the rides, rewritability is the most important factor. If it's a ride that you love to go on and you can go on 10 times, that ride will be around for a very long time. If it's a ride that you either were afraid of going, it was rough or scary or something was wrong with it, that's a ride that probably will be replaced. And usually when you go to these parks, you can tell, and they keep track of who's going through the turnstiles. The amount of people that are on a ride. If a ride is losing money because a lot of people are not riding it, they're going to replace it with something else. So some of the rides will last, for example, like the one over in Luna Park in Brooklyn, New York, and Coney Island, which is, you know, the Cyclone. That's been around since 1927. it's still there. Belmont Park also San Diego, that's still there. So, you know, the older rides will stay if they're rewritable, if they've done great, and people still love them. The rides that are not good will be replaced within one or 2 years for a better ride.
The book that's currently out is America's Top Roller Coasters and Amusement Parks, but as you mentioned, you have a new one coming out in June, correct?
Yes, I do. It's going to be my personal favorite amusement parks thrill rides, but I've also included, of course, water parks like last time, and also non-roller coaster thrill rides. Like, I'm sure we've all been to Florida and been on Tower of Terror or gone to Soaring or have done Test Track or any of those type of rides where they're not roller coasters, but they're thrill rides, and they're all over the country. I mentioned, I think, 20 of the best rides around for people to look at that are non-roller coasters, plus tips on travel, tips on, you know, staying hydrated during the summertime, obviously when, you know, you want to worry about stuff like that, and just tips in general for the family. So it covers a lot of other things other than just roller coasters.
Will you come back on the program with us when the book comes out in June?
Absolutely, and if I'm in your area, we can ride roller coasters together.
Look forward to talking to you once again. Thanks for being on the program with us, Pete.
And thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Pete Trabuco, author of America's Top Roller Coasters and Amusement Parks. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0334, and you'll find links to Pete's website, plus also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Dorothy Hamill is one of the most famous figure skaters the United States has ever produced. After winning 4 national championships, she went on to win the Olympic gold medal in 1976. Long before she became a world-class skater, she discovered the thrill of ice skating on a pond near her house in Greenwich, Connecticut. If you go there today, you can still see the pond. But if you'd like to lace up your skates and pretend you're an Olympic medalist, you can't. It's prohibited. 10 years ago, officials in the city banned skating on all the ponds in the community. One of the main reasons for the ban was the concern about liability and getting sued. Let's be fair. We've talked about a lot of ways that America has changed in recent years because of excessive litigation and the growing fear of being sued. But few stories illustrate that any better than the sad fact that boys and girls in Dorothy Hamill's hometown can no longer skate on a pond under the sun and clouds. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And for the first time in 2016, we have an opportunity to slip between the covers with Stuart Nauman. No, that didn't sound right. But anyway, hi, Stu. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. You mean warm covers, actually, depending on where you live.
Well, I meant book covers, but I don't know what you're talking about.
Those warm fleece covers.
Okay.
While you're producing the other covers.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, I mean, that's depending where you live, like I said before. But if you like to travel a little bit, and I'm sure a lot of people do in warm climes, you know, this time of year. Book Banter, this edition, we're going to look at a travel book. But a travel book with a bit of a difference, actually. You know, because almost 2 years ago, award-winning author Will Ferguson took a three-week journey that saw him travel across every inch of Rwanda, the most densely populated country in Africa. Now, basically, he wanted to see how this troubled nation was able to rise from the ashes of the savage Rwandan genocide of 1994, in which the virulent tribal hatred between the country's Hutu and Tutsi populations resulted in the brutal slaughter of about 1 million Rwandans, the majority of them Tutsis, in a total indiscriminate manner. Now, accompanied by a gentleman named Jean-Claude Yezmu, who was a Rwandan who fled the country a month before the genocide began, later settled in Calgary to establish a foundation that helped children through their troubles via the game of soccer. And he Ferguson not only wanted to see the many faces of the natural landscapes of Rwanda, but also discover how it has recovered at all from the horrendous tragedy of the genocide. So what Ferguson and Jean-Claude witnessed during this three-week trek is recorded in fascinating detail in his latest book called Road Trip Rwanda. There are two main themes that are prevalent in this book. One is how Rwanda has remarkably picked itself up from the horrors of the genocide to become a more modern, progressive country within the African continent. And second, no matter where the two went throughout the country, there was no escaping the physical and emotional scars Rwanda and its people have suffered as a result of the genocide.
Now, how long after the end of the genocide did they travel there?
It's about 20 years.
20 years?
20 years.
Wow, okay.
Now, as well, Ferguson has done his homework by providing detailed backgrounders on the history of Rwanda, its exploitation and occupation by the Germans, Belgians, and French, its history of violent ethnic and tribal clashes, and the circumstances that led to the 1994 genocide. This gives the reader a much clearer picture of Rwanda's tragic past, so they can get a better appreciation of the gradual, painful healing the country has been through over the past 20 years, a healing that Ferguson and Jean-Claude experienced and witnessed throughout their road trip. But the road trip was not only focused on the aftermath of the genocide. We get to see them experience the positive aspects of what Rwandan food, culture, and wildlife offered them, from observing the majestic silverback gorillas that inhabit the Virunga Mountains, made famous by Diane Fossey, of course, to the Rwandan custom of, it's called Umuganda, in which every citizen is obliged to perform an act of community service for one day every month.
Wow.
Now, go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, I just said, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it is, actually.
Yeah.
But the road trip to Rwanda, I found it's an engrossing story with a great deal of humanity. Will Ferguson has given the rest of the world a progress report in the form of a travel log of the rebirth of a third world country that underwent an unspeakable, horrendous human tragedy to a gradually progressive modern society. And after reading this book, I can readily understand why the expression terrible beauty can easily apply to the story of Rwanda.
Hmm. And the book is entitled?
Road Trip Rwanda. It's by Will Ferguson. It's published by Viking Press, and it's $34.
And dare I say, I doubt you'll find a travel book similar in vein to this one, but I will ask the question. Someone who is reading this, what else do you recommend in a similar vein?
Well, I say if you're going to read a terrific travel book, a travel book in general, I recommend A Walk in the Woods by Bill Bryson. This was released in 1998, and it chronicles his solo journey of the 2,000-mile journey of the entire Appalachian Trail from Maine to Georgia. It may sound mundane at first, but it's a very fascinating read. And also, if you want to read more about Rwanda and the genocide, I highly recommend former Senator Romeo Dallaire's memoir, Shake Hands with the Devil.
Interesting. And again, this book is entitled?
Road Trip Rwanda. It's by Will Ferguson, who's won quite a lot of awards, including the Giller Award. And it's published by Viking Press, and it's $34.
Excellent. And how can people find you, sir?
Well, if I'm not traveling the Appalachian Trail, which I doubt I will do, you can find me in the Montreal Times every week in print or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Excellent. And I will mention, by the way, another travel book because it's somebody I had on the program just a few weeks ago. Marty Essen is the author of a book called Endangered Edens, plural.
Oh, really?
And he's become quite the travel writer and college speaker based on some of his travels to various places in the world, which is something he took up and decided to write about. So Endangered Edens by Marty Essen is a book to take a look at. In any case, sir, I will let you continue on your travels. Thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
You're welcome, Peter. Now I just got to go find my toothbrush. Where is that darn thing?
Stuart Nelman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're into the home stretch here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We have a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you before we get to our idiot of the day. Here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. A Minnesota woman was arrested after biting a piece of her husband's ear off during an argument regarding beer. 37-year-old Jamie Elrod was arrested and charged with first-degree assault after police entered her home, finding overturned furniture, blood, and a piece of her husband's ear. The victim originally claimed that the ear was injured during a fight downtown, but later told police that the two were arguing over a beer when Elrod followed him into the bedroom and attacked him. Elrod was believed to have been drinking and had no recollection of the attack when asked about her husband's ear. She is being held on a $30,000 bond. Well, in future arguments, she will never be able to scream at him, "You never listen to me!" Meanwhile, her passengers had run away, leaving 23-year-old Elena Bartman-Wallman behind the wheel but oblivious on a December afternoon in Alaska, and her car's tires had started to smoke. She had lodged her foot against the accelerator, facing the wrong way on the road, with her wheels spinning continuously. And by the time police arrived to discover her passed out, the front tires had melted down to the rims. Wow, there's drunk, and then there's really drunk. Authorities in Virginia said a man busted for marijuana possession had called 911 in a disoriented state and requested delivery of rolling papers. The Waynesboro Police Department said 24-year-old Kyle Dustin Head is believed to have been under the influence of marijuana when he called 911 and asked a dispatcher to bring him rolling papers. Two officers were dispatched to Head's location, and he was found sitting in a parked 2005 Chevrolet pickup truck. The officers detected the odor of marijuana and noticed the green leafy substance on Head's clothing, the dashboard of his truck, the passenger seat, and in his right ear. Police did speculate as to how marijuana ended up in the suspect's ear, but the situation led them to announce a pothead named Head had pot on Head in a news release. Head allegedly told officers he had thought he was calling a friend when he called 911 and asked the dispatcher to bring him papers. Head was cited for misdemeanor marijuana possession. Well, if he had pot in his ears, clearly he's doing it wrong. And a car shot through a traffic light in Pensacola, Florida, and apparently without slowing down, crashed into a building housing three businesses, including a tax preparer and a casket company. The car blew through the front doors and ended up somewhere near the back doors. No one was injured, including the Dodge Challenger's unidentified driver. The driver, however, was taken to a local facility for evaluation, apparently a mental evaluation. Police said the driver told them he was trying to travel through time. And by the way, he was going at around 88 miles per hour, which scientifically isn't remotely close to time travel. If that were the case, NASCAR drivers would end their races as toddlers. And we do have a Darwin file story to share with you. A man walking along Sunset Cliffs in San Diego, California on Christmas Day at sunset wasn't paying attention to the gorgeous view. Witnesses stated seeing someone distracted by an electronic device and he just fell over the edge, says lifeguard Bill Bender. 33-year-old Joshua M. Burrell of Sheridan, Indiana, wasn't watching where he was walking. He was looking down at the device in his hands. Most witnesses thought it was a cell phone, but the lifeguards who recovered his body 60 feet below did not find the device. Another Darwin file casualty in what is sure to become the ultimate 21st century tragedy. Not recovering from the last selfie. Yes. Because, as you know, in the Darwin file, the tree of life is often self-pruning. And at this moment, after we pause for a moment of silence, okay, that's long enough. At this moment, it's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff I present, the idiot of the day.
This week we have for you a pair of candidates that have earned our title. You could also label them as least competent criminals or not ready for prime time crime. Either way, here they are. Number one, 45-year-old Kenneth Rogers was arrested in November and charged with breaking into a home in Cape San Blas, which is located in the Florida Panhandle. A burglar alarm notified police, who found Rogers still in the house because he had accidentally locked himself in a room. And number two, in Gloucester, England, 25-year-old Jamie Sharp, who clearly wasn't, stole a Porsche and was in the process of telephoning friends to brag when he crashed, pinning himself inside until rescuers and police arrived. In December, he was sentenced to 4 years in prison. Now, why, oh why, are jails on both sides of the pond filled with such criminals? Well, one reason, and one reason only, they're idiots!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0334. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0334. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Any rebroadcast of this copywritten program in whole or in part without the express written consent of... Oh, God, who the hell are we kidding? Who's going to steal this show? God, who writes this stuff? Holder, what a kidder.